Thank you, fellow speechwriters. Today I'd like to give you a little peek into the processes and assessments behind the speeches held by the Norwegian Minister of Defence. In short, these considerations are part of an intricate narrative that intertwines the pen and the sword. In the context of global security, these two are potent tools in a nation's defence and security strategies. Nowhere is this more clearly expressed than in speechwriting. So speechwriting in the Ministry of Defence is not only about communication. It's a tool for framing and reinforcing the narratives around our national security policies. Carefully crafted speeches can serve to deter, to reassure, or to compel, reflecting the intentions behind our military postures and alliances. Norway, as a small nation far to the north, plays only a minor part on the international stage, and our impact may be seen as limited. However, our home waters are of geostrategic importance, and as climate change impacts the Arctic, this region's importance will only increase. So today I'll share with you some insights into the relationship between strategic communications and national defence and security policies as expressed through speechwriting. The dimensioning factor for Norwegian defence and security policy is the fact that we share a 200-kilometer long border with Russia. Unlike most of Russia's neighbors, we have never been at war with them. In fact, Soviet forces liberated the Eastern Finnmark in 1944, making it the first area liberated from the Nazis after their occupation in 1940. Also, unlike other areas liberated by the Soviet Union, in Norway the Red Army withdrew when their presence was no longer required. Nevertheless, Soviet behavior in the rest of Europe and their anti-democratic ideology made us adversaries in what was to become the Cold War. Norway's painful experiences in World War II underscored our need for strong alliances, and Norway was one of the 12 founding members of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in 1949. A defense alliance based on a common belief in democracy and a world order based on rules, not on might. However, to reassure our northernmost neighbor, our membership in NATO came with some self-imposed restrictions. We would not host foreign bases on Norwegian soil in peacetime. We would not accept prepositioning of nuclear weapons in Norway, and we would restrict training and exercise close to the border. And these restrictions were very publicly stated. Thus, our membership in NATO filled a role in deterrence, while our publicly stated restrictions helped reassure our neighbors. And this balance between deterrence and reassurance remained virtually unchanged for decades and are regarded as a necessary measure to ensure peace and stability in our areas of interest. When the Iron Curtain fell, local initiatives coincided with government attitudes, and cooperation both culturally and economically soon made headway across the border. Optimism was the order of the day, and Norway, like most other Western countries, cashed out the so-called peace dividend. In other words, we saw a significant reduction in our defense capabilities. Russia's brutal invasion of Ukraine, sovereign neighbor, has changed that. And the Norwegian government presented the long-term defense plan just 2 weeks ago. In that plan, the government commits to reaching the 2% spending goal this year, and increasing defense spending up to 3% of GDP in the next decade. As stated in that plan, Norwegian strategy stands firmly on three pillars. The first pillar is a strong and credible national defense. This commitment aligns with Article 3 in the NATO chapter, which obligates each member state to develop its own capabilities. Strong and national capable defense also ensures that we will be able to meet an aggressor waiting for our allies to arrive. And every fourth year, the government presents such a new long-term plan. It's presented publicly and usually leads to a comprehensive public debate and discourse before the plan, with modifications, is adopted by Parliament. The Minister of Defence holds several speeches during this period and uses every opportunity to reinforce the main message about our credible national capabilities. The second pillar is our active participation in NATO, now more relevant than ever in its 75-year history. NATO is first and foremost a political alliance, centered on Article 5. It simply states that an attack on one or more members of the alliance will be considered an attack of all of them. And the effectiveness of this alliance hinges upon its credibility. That in turn depends on each member having significant national defense capabilities, common coherent plans, common command and control interoperability, frequent joint exercises, and a host of other military minutiae. However, the most crucial element in NATO's capability to deter an adversary is a joint political will to act on Article 5. Norway aims to take its share of the burdens inherent in our membership as a clear sign that we are committed to the alliance, a commitment that is reaffirmed whenever the Minister of Defence speaks in international forums, just like the other defence ministers, prime ministers and foreign ministers of the alliance. In that way, speeches contribute to the alliance's political cohesion and credibility, and thus its deterrence capability. For instance, the inclusion of Sweden into NATO was not just a procedural change, but a moment of significant strategic importance, celebrated and solidified through public declarations, also in Norway. And these speeches served as a public reaffirmation of our shared values and collective security. The third pillar of Norwegian defence and security strategy is fostering and expanding bilateral agreements, especially with key partners like the USA, Great Britain, Germany, and France. Recent expansions of NATO, with both Finland and Sweden now as members, will also expand the number of bilateral agreements, further enhancing our collaborative defence capabilities. The articulation of bilateral agreements, such as in speeches, serve to solidify and validate these partnerships. Publicly discussing the integration of Finland and Sweden into NATO not only informs but also reassures our partners and contributes to deterring potential adversaries by showcasing our unified approach. As we've seen, defensive security in the Western world are deeply influenced by a complex web of agreements, from the UN Charter to the NATO treaties and EU regulations, as well as specific bilateral agreements. And each of these agreements are underpinned by the shared values and mutual trust among member nations. So mutual trust between nations is the bedrock upon which effective international relations are built. This trust is cultivated over decades through consistent, transparent, and reliable communication, elements central to effective speechwriting. Each speech delivered by our leaders at international forums is not just about stating a position, but about reinforcing trust, demonstrating commitment, and fostering long-term partnerships. So these communications are strategic tools that help maintain the integrity of international agreements and ensure their continued relevance and effectiveness. And nowhere is this more apparent than in defense and security policy, especially within the NATO framework. Speechwriters in the fields of defense and security policy have a responsibility to use their skills, their creativity, and their arts to further the security and defense policies of their countries. A skilled wordsmith can influence and support efforts of deterrence and reassurance. So speechwriters can support the struggle for peace. Words alone are rarely enough, but in a carefully choreographed dance of sword and pen, deterrence can be achieved. I mentioned Russia as the dimensioning factor for Norwegian defense and security policy. Russia's belief that might is right, more than a rules-based world order, is nowhere more obvious than in Ukraine today. And the brutal Russian invasion of Ukraine is accompanied by Russian use of propaganda, disinformation campaigns, misuse and falsification of history, outright lies, threats against neighbors, and nuclear saber rattling. All of these, but especially the Russian rhetoric regarding the potential use of nuclear weapons, have had an impact on Western decision-making and is an obvious example of how armaments and rhetoric goes hand in hand. Despite Russia's brutal attack and invasion of a peaceful neighbor, it's far from the only country that challenges the Western world's values and a rules-based world order. Especially China, North Korea, and Iran have explicitly stated that they defy the Western values. There's an ongoing low-intensity hybrid campaign against our institutions, interests, and even our populations. Interference in elections, distortion of history, inciting anger, disbelief, and anti-vaccine sentiments, they're all part of the toolbox of our adversaries. The battlefield is the cognitive domain, and the threat actors use all available techniques. artificial intelligence, social media, alternative media, direct messaging, deepfakes, and even telephone calls are all part of the repertoire. And without any need to care about whether their communications are true or false, they can throw an unbelievable amount of dirt to see what sticks, and then develop the angles of attack that actually works. One could claim that there's an ongoing conflict in the information domain in the West, where only one side needs to take truth and effect into consideration. And the stakes could not be higher. When elected officials in the Western world repeat the lie that Ukraine is run by Nazis, it shows the effect of Russian influence operations, disinformation, and lies. So what can speechwriters do? In addition to supporting the policy aims of their principals and ministries, of course. I believe that speechwriters must adhere to the truth, first and foremost. And in addition, uncertainties, especially in the science and research field, must be clearly stated. I also believe that one should not help facilitate unreasonable attacks on political opponents. And the use of rhetoric must be balanced and used sparingly after careful consideration. Above all else, however, I believe that speechwriters have a responsibility to be as truthful as possible, and even more important, to argue with the principals and other stakeholders for truthfulness. Because I believe that one of my predecessors here at the Cambridge Conference was right. Words do matter. Thank you.